You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It's Sunday as we record. The NCAA basketball tournament is going on. Coach K is still alive. Ari, as I was watching the final minutes of Michigan State and Duke, I just started making football comparisons. I couldn't help it. Like, what if this was Nick Saban's last? Because, I mean, they looked done. They were down five, and they came back. Duke really did kind of dig deep to get back, but I was thinking, okay, what is this? What if this was Nick Saban's final game? And also, who is football Izzo? Like, I don't know if there's a football K either, but I think I know who football Izzo is.
Who's football Izzo?
Bob Stoops was football Izzo.
That's perfect, because he won a national championship right the same year, I think, even.
Well, you want to hear something wild. Bob Stoops won his national title 7 months after Tom Izzo won his.
Yeah, that is... Yeah, he's not an active coach, but yeah, that certainly makes the case. You want to know the prevailing thought that I had while watching games this weekend, Andy?
What's that?
Especially because I'm on a bunch of group texts with guys, you know, good friends of mine, who are texting constantly, and there's like this prevailing, like, I want Michigan State to win. I hate Coach K. Get out of there. And like this isn't a unique phenomenon in the Ari Wasserman friend group. And the thing that I've always wondered.
He's probably the most disliked elite coach in sports, I think.
But when somebody has accomplished, I mean, first of all, we watch sports to witness greatness, right?
Right.
And I know that people sour on the same results all the time. But how can you like watch his temperament, his mannerisms, how much he clearly cares about his players, what he's accomplished, and root for him to fail right now? And it's just like, I think it would be awesome if they made the Final Four in his final year, because that's just like, the man is iconic, you know? And everybody that I've come in contact to seems to have this dislike. They were laughing when North Carolina beat him in his final game at home. And it's like, why do people hate successful coaches?
Like, so, okay. Let me stop process you there, because there are people who hate Belichick and there are people who hate Nick Saban, but I think there are a lot more people who have grudging respect, even if they dislike the teams that Belichick and Saban coach, that they still say they're the greatest. I love them. Something about Coach K specifically rubs people the wrong way.
Can you put your finger on it?
I'm not exactly sure what it is. You know, a lot of it's like, you know, giving the guy advice in the handshake line who just beat him. Hey, don't showboat us, they lose to North Carolina and he's giving a speech after the game. Like, can you ever imagine Bill Belichick giving a speech after a loss under any circumstances?
Well, remember how he started that speech.
Well, I remember.
Yeah. I mean,
shut up.
he was telling people to shut up and said that's unacceptable. He's supposed to be addressing the crowd and saying goodbye to Cameron Indoor, and he was more concerned. I mean, I think that's what makes him great. And you want to know
the only acceptable coach grabbing the mic speech, by the way, in the history of sports, like in competition, I realized this was after the game, is Sam Weish when they were throwing stuff on the field and he took the mic and he goes, "You're not in Cleveland."
You want to know what my prevailing thought is, Andy?
Yes.
I think there is a certain hatred towards Coach K because Duke is a very respected academic institution.
Because it's an elite academic institution.
And I think that people view him and his teams as being elitists.
I think that's right. And a little bit too try-hardy. Like, they always have better players. I mean, not always. Like, you know, when they have to play Kentucky or North Carolina or Kansas, they don't always have better players. But they usually have better players than the team they're playing. And when you see that dude slap the four, you're like, oh, come on. don't act like the worst player at the Y right now.
Yeah, I just feel like I'm weird. I'm not rooting for him to fail. I think it's cool that he's succeeding right now. And I hope they make the Final Four, because if you give your life to something, and from all we know, whether we like his temperament or his personality or some of the things that he's done along the way, our understanding is that he did things the right way. He built a program and did and accomplished things in college basketball that no other coach really has. And to me, I respect that. So
the thing I find interesting about him, and this is similar to Saban, where he changed his philosophy. Remember when Elton Brand decided to go pro? Corey Maggette decided to go pro. Brand and Maggette were around the same time. But people freaked out, like, how could you leave Duke early? And Kay was not particularly thrilled about it. But then as things evolved, he watched. He saw Calipari doing the one-and-done thing. He saw Calipari get into Final Fours. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to do the one-and-done thing. Just, you know, better.
Well, so it's evolution, being able to evolve, you know.
Right.
And, but, you know, this is a football podcast. I know that. But I view Nick Saban and the great coaches the same way in football, you know. And it's just like there's people who probably hate Alabama because they're tired of seeing him there every single year. But I don't view him negatively. I think he's a pioneer.
I don't think people other than LSU fans hate Nick Saban the way people hate Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah. I mean, what's the hate? He's like that's the thing that's so funny to me. It's like, why do you hate somebody? Because he's good? Like,
he's good in a way that you don't like. That's really all it is. And Saban was hated like that for a long time. Saban has just been so good that it has become undeniable. You know, I guess with Kay, and look, he's made the second week of the tournament 26 times now. Like, that is obscene. There's really no argument. I don't know if he's in a class by himself, but he's in a really rare group of basketball coaches. So with Saban, he's clearly the best who's ever done it, and so it does make it somewhat undeniable. But with Kay, he's close enough to undeniable that even if you dislike him, even if you dislike the way he does it, you still have to appreciate what he's done.
Well, I'm not a big basketball buff, so if I miss somebody that's obvious, forgive me. But who are the other coaches that are in Coach K's class? Or is it John Wooden? Is like that?
John
Wooden
is probably the one who is in his class by himself, but John Wooden coached in a different era. I'm not sure John Wooden could have stacked national titles in this era.
No, absolutely not.
So I mean, Coach K is up there with the best of the best. Do you put Roy up there?
I don't know his stats off the top of my head, but
Kay's got more national titles. Kay beat Roy when Roy was at Kansas for a national title. They were, you know, very competitive when Roy was at
Roy is up there, but I think that there's like different classes too, because, and this is the craziest thing about Saban, is that Nick Saban built Alabama to what he was, but the man also won a national championship somewhere else. So just in case anybody wants to say anything about how Alabama is a system, or, you know, it's the program. And granted, I know LSU also kind of recruits to itself.
But LSU stunk. Yeah. LSU was a middling SEC program before Nick Saban got there.
Doing it in multiple places and building multiple places, I think, is fascinating. And sometimes I wonder if it weren't for Nick Saban, if LSU would be what it is now.
I don't think they would. He created a blueprint not only for LSU, but at LSU, he created the blueprint that he then brought to Alabama.
And LSU continued to subscribe to it.
Correct.
So it's funny to me, because it's just like, how do LSU fans actually view Nick Saban? I don't even know the answer to that. I mean, do they view him?
I don't think they hate him as much anymore, because, look, he did go to the NFL. And I know it's become cliche at this point, but I believe that if that trade had been consummated and Drew Brees had gone to Miami, Nick Saban would still be coaching in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I know about the NFL is if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have anything. And I don't care how good the rest of your team is. You need a quarterback who's at least above average to get anywhere you need to go. And getting somebody like Drew Brees in his prime would have certainly been a nice little leg up. And it's just like, when you look at the NFL, who are the franchises that are most in the dumps for the longest periods of time. It's the ones that are turning over quarterbacks and trying to draft ones. And it's like, oh my God, Bengals draft Joe Burrow 2 years later in the Super Bowl. It's like, oh really? Like there's a major correlation. Yeah, it's
suddenly like the Bengals are a stable organization that spends money on, oh wait, they don't, but they have the quarterback now.
So you know, that's a very fascinating take. And it's funny because they're with Urban Meyer this year, not doing very well. And obviously he had some off the field stuff that he has to work through, but it just, the idea of like going into the NFL or going from college to pros, and maybe it's different in the NBA, but what is the thing that makes it so hard for people who are so brilliant? Is it, and my main idea is that the people who are brilliant in college are amazing at recruiting. And that is the thing that carries them the way. And in the NFL, you don't have any control over the order in which you draft outside of wins and losses. And of course, free agency and the financial constraints that come with it are all part of the game there. So, you know, the fact that, I mean, and Nick Saban's tenure at the Dolphins wasn't bad. Wasn't he like 500?
No.
And it wasn't a disaster.
They played the Patriots tough. Like they frustrated the Patriots. So it's not like he wasn't good there. It's that he, again, which we see this a lot with him, and this is something Coach K has been able to do, he saw the future pretty well. As soon as that Drew Brees thing didn't happen, he's looking down the road at what that quarterback situation is going to be going forward. And it's like, well, I don't think I'm going to win here.
And just being able to be real with yourself about the situation that you're in and what the future can hold, I think.
Also, I think Mal Moore was camped out in his driveway and wouldn't leave. Like, at that point, because remember, Rich Rodriguez had tentatively accepted the job, then called back and been like, no, I'm going to stay at West Virginia. So Mal Moore was out of options. Like, this is January at this point. He had to hire Nick Saban or he was probably getting fired.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It is funny because they're, and I don't know if it's just because of my profession or because I just love college football so much, but as I watch the NCAA tournament, I mean, you and I all weekend were texting about things, and it's just like we're trying to make parallels to the college football game. And I think the most interesting one of them all was when we were texting about the budgets last night.
Oh my gosh.
Tell people
budget.
The numbers that we found.
So I looked up that if you haven't, this is all on the internet. It's available for anybody to look at. It's the Department of Education's Equity and Athletics Database. It's not a perfect measure of everything because schools have different accounting methods, but it's a good apples to apples comparison for stuff. And so I looked up the St. Peter's basketball budget for the last reporting year, which I think was the last year before the pandemic. I think they're a little
Before you tell them, Andy. Yeah. I want everybody to internalize in your heart and in your brain your guess. So just think right now, take a second. What do you think St. Peter spent in a calendar year in the recent years on their basketball budget? And then 3, 2, 1. Andy?
$1.5 million. How much did Kentucky spend in the same last reporting year? $18.8 million.
The funniest thing, too, is that Coach Cal alone made almost nine times as much, maybe eight times as much in six a single year, much, just yes. based on six times. I don't know. I'm not very good at math. We've established that on this podcast. one and a half. Yes, whatever. $9 million just in his salary. And it's just like, to me, I'm trying to think, because even in the biggest upsets in football, and granted, I understand that basketball and football are very different games.
Right.
But what is the only lopsided budget that you could even ever come up with in terms of an upset like that is App State and Michigan back whatever year that
right.
was.
Right. And the budgets were different numbers. Like, if I gave you Michigan's 2007 football budget, you'd laugh now, because that'd be like a group of five budget now.
But what is the, like, when Purdue beats Ohio State, or when, you know, South Carolina almost beats Alabama, are the biggest upsets that we get in the last 5 years. You lose to a team that's clearly inferior and doesn't have nearly as much talent, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
But at least the investments, maybe it's the collective bargaining agreements with the television contracts and these conferences, but it's not like Purdue beating Ohio State is the most bonkers thing in the history of the world.
Purdue's because of the also rich. Like, it's rich. Basically like they both live in the gated neighborhood. Ohio State just has a little bit bigger house.
But it's not like, just look at it from a financial standpoint. And St. Peter's looks like they ironed on their jerseys at the YMCA before the game started.
Oh, Ari, St. Peter's making it to the Sweet 16. That means we're in a week of this. So like, when Florida Gulf Coast became the first 15 seed to make it to the second weekend, a few of us ventured down to Fort Myers. Like, I'm in Gainesville, so it's a 4-hour drive. I had covered, I think, a region in Detroit or a sub-regional in Detroit. I came home and they're like, get your ass to Fort Myers. And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to Dunk City. And I spent a glorious day in Dunk City writing a story about those guys before they went to Dallas to get shredded by Florida. And it was awesome. But because of where St. Peter's is, you're going to get some capital J journalism about the Peacocks.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're in Jersey City. They are a path train away from all of the elite of the elite Big J journalists.
Well, I thought that was funny. The coach said after the game, all our guys are from Jersey and New York. You think we're afraid of this tournament? And I thought that was really funny.
Oh, yeah.
But I honestly, you know, and this podcast is a safe space. We can be honest with each other. I had never heard of that school before this tournament started.
So I don't know if you have. Because I covered one of their games. They were an early conference opponent for the first Florida team that won the national title. And they had a guy, I think, who was the returning leading scorer in the NCAA. Whose name escapes me right now.
And then they go out and beat Kentucky.
Right.
So it's just like, and if you're a Kentucky fan, not even if you're a Kentucky fan, but if you are a administrator at Kentucky, do you just like look at the balance sheet and just go, what the hell just happened here?
I think you do that. And I think you kind of wonder how, like, because Cal basically has a lifetime contract, but the fan base is now soured on him. And look, he can get him back by winning a national title, but it felt like this team was actually built that way, like built correctly, could beat you in many different ways, had the most, the only problem they had was inconsistency other than Oscar Tshiebwe. Like, Oscar Tshiebwe showed up for every game. He was awesome in every game. But you didn't know what you were going to get out of various play, out of Wheeler or Grady or Ty Washington, you know, from game to game. And when everything was cooking, or even when most everything was cooking, they were capable of winning. But they had several games where they just showed up and Oscar was the only guy playing.
You know, this game and this run, and it's not like this is the first time that a team like St. Peter's has advanced the way that they have. But this, to me, is the reason why I hate comparing college basketball to college football. You know, people were tweeting at me, do stars not matter and all this stuff? And, you know, like,
not
to me,
in basketball, because not, if your stars play badly and the other team has a couple good players, you can lose. Especially if the other team has good chemistry.
But I don't even know what upset you would equate that to. And it happens. It's not the craziest thing in the world. A one right. loss was, to a 16 like 3 or 4 years ago. So,
right.
Like, if you wanted to make a
15 is beaten a 2. It's happened 10 times.
But what game in college football could you make a comparison to of just like that is the same thing as Kentucky losing to St. Peter's? Like, I can't. Okay. Even the Appalachian State team that beat Michigan, didn't they win the national title the year before
they
and
did.
That year at their level?
Yes, they did.
So, like,
at FCS,
it's like What, Jacksonville State beating Florida State? Is that like a, is that a budget numbers
that
crunch?
It's kind of like that. Georgia Southern beating Florida. Yeah. That's probably, I mean, that FCS beating an FBS is probably, and that's really what a lot of these schools are.
I guess it just costs a lot more money to run a football program than a basketball program because there's more players, more equipment. And
also because there's 22 position players versus five. And you've got to have, like, that's how you stack your advantage.
It's just like, the salary thing is what blows my mind. It's like the coach of the team that lost makes, what was it you said? Five times as much?
Six times as much as the other team's entire budget.
Oh, yeah. 1.5, 6, 9. Got it. Yeah. nice. I just,
by the way,
and like, that's including travel, facilities, nutrition, everything. Coaching. Yep. I mean, that's everything. And Cal made six times as much of that just in his own paycheck.
For the trip down memory lane, Kedron Clark is the name I was searching for. He averaged 26.3 points a game in the 2005-06 season. And then I saw him in Gainesville in November of 06, and I believe he only had 11 against a team that was going to win the national.
Do you think
title.
Football would be a better sport if this happened more frequently? Do you think college football would be more fun if
isn't this what we keep talking about, the desire for more parity?
Yeah, but parity is not the same thing as teams losing to teams that aren't even in the same weight class.
No, I don't think it would be. It wouldn't be more fun if that happened more. Although that's fun when it happens. I would like that to stay as rare as it is because it is just like, whoa, and when it happens. What would make it more fun is if Alabama would lose to Mississippi State a little bit more often.
Yeah.
Like that, and I hate to, pick on teams that lose to Purdue, but like it feels like that's what's when Ohio State lost to Purdue a few years ago, when Michigan State lost to Purdue this year. Like, well, even when Iowa lost to Purdue this year, it feels like those are huge moments on those campuses. They certainly look huge when you see the fans celebrating them. So yeah, I'd like to see probably that more often. And I don't know if NIL is going to get us that. I still have a theory that NIL will distribute the talent slightly more evenly, but not really a lot more evenly. Alabama, Georgia are still going to get theirs. Ohio State's still going to get theirs.
I was just like thinking, after St. Peter's lost to Kentucky, and obviously that was insane, and it's the story Kentucky of the tournament, but it happens so frequently that the craziness of it doesn't really, it didn't, like, the ground didn't shake the way it does when it shakes in football.
Well, I think the St. Peter's one, because we were trying to figure out where it ranked among those 15-2 games, and like, the Middle Tennessee State, Michigan State one a few years ago was a very shocking result. But Middle Tennessee State is an FBS school.
Didn't Ohio they State lose a 15-2 game last year?
They did.
So, I mean, I feel like it happens every year or every
Roberts,
other year.
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, Oral, I don't remember what the seeding was, but I think it was 15-2.
It was 15-2, yeah.
And it just like, I guess that's what makes the tournament great, because everybody's anticipating it, and that's why making a bracket's fun, because nobody can figure it out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, too, it's just like, I feel like that upset is of such monumental territory, and it doesn't get received that way because it's common. And it's like, I don't know if there is...
Is because the games are coming at us so fast...
It's like you're already in the tip-off of the next game right after that happens.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah. You're like, okay, what's next?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it really is insanity. And
like, but the other thing is it's harder, I think, because people don't appreciate, people don't watch college basketball as closely as they watch college football. So the upsets don't mean as much, or they ascribe like the football brand of the school. Like, I am currently watching Notre Dame and Texas Tech. There's 4 minutes and 28 seconds left. Notre Dame's up by one. If Notre Dame wins this game, it is a massive upset. Notre Dame was a very inconsistent ACC team that had to go to the first four.
But their logo looks cool.
Right. But they would have beaten Alabama, which was a maddeningly inconsistent SEC team that happened to beat Gonzaga and Baylor during the regular season. Alabama was one of those teams that, like, on the right day they could beat anybody, but on the right day they could also lose to anyone. So that wasn't as shocking. But Texas Tech was like the most consistent, like lockdown defensive team in the Big 12. I realize that Kansas won the tournament and all that, but Texas Tech was a really good team. We'll probably still be talking when this game ends, so we'll let you know what happens if you didn't watch it. But that would be a massive upset, but nobody will think that because it's Notre Dame. Like, people have Notre Dame in their mind totally as like an elite program and everything, but they're not. This would be a huge upset.
I mean, they were almost left out of the tournament altogether, and Texas Tech plays with so much swag. It's so, I mean, I'm upset we're not watching it now. I would turn it on, but I'm afraid that our video is going to cut out because my internet here is a dial up. So
we're gonna get that fixed. That's what, like, one of the we can't do math joke of our podcast. The Ari's internet keeps going out. Ari record, like, I have my backdrop behind me that I've,
it's a beautiful backdrop.
I've been curating this backdrop for over a year now. I've now got it backlit and like all this stuff. Ari records on a bed because it's the only place in his house where he can find adequate internet.
Yeah, it's insane. And like, the thing that is annoying about it is that when we got the internet, I told the guy, I said, I don't care how much it costs. I want the fastest internet and I want it to be effective in the entire house. Because I guess it's just like the rooms are too far away from where the router is. And I'm buying these Nest things, but I heard that you have to have a specific type of internet for the Nest things to work. But like, I have a beautiful backdrop and an office and a desk like a normal human being.
Your office is great. You got framed stuff on the walls. I got framed
pictures of stadiums I visited. I can't even wait. And bands, and I've got a bookshelf. I mean, I am not a hobo, and my backdrop is a sconce.
One sconce, but
and by the way, I didn't know what a sconce was till I moved into this house.
Britt said, "Can you turn?" I did not know what a sconce was until I was a homeowner as well.
I walked into my bedroom like the night that we moved in, and Britt was laying in bed, and she goes, "Look at my sconce."
You're like,
I was like, I don't. I mean, I would like to. Do I want to look at your sconce?
I definitely want to see your sconce.
I want to see your sconce. And like, we were looking back and forth.
Show me your sconce, baby.
But I said,
But it's a fun word to say. Like, once you hear it and understand what it is, do you walk around? Like,
yes, every time you see it, all the time now.
Do you go sconce, 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 sconce?
But like, it was this like weird back and forth. She goes, "Look at my sconce," and I said, "What's a sconce?" And she goes, "A sconce."
Is that what you kids are calling it these days?
Sconce. And she goes, "Sconce." And I said, "Lady, I've never heard that word in my entire life." And she goes, "This little light next to your bed is a sconce." And I said, "Oh, I thought you were asking me to look at something completely different." But I'm happy that we knocked that down. And it's like, I don't know what it is about me, and maybe it's just me, but like, I'm supposed to be good with the English language, right? Like, as a writer, you're supposed to have
everyone assumes that.
They expect that of me.
We need to write at a fourth grade level. We want people to understand what we say. We're not writing for a Harvard Business School audience.
Yeah, I tried to write conversationally. But in a group chat, somebody used the word thruple. Have you ever heard that word?
Thruple?
I think like it's thruple.
Thruple. We're talking about a thruple. Thruple. That would be a couple, but three people, which is
never heard that word in my entire life.
A little kinky.
Yeah.
That's because you're not a swinger.
What is that, like a sexual term? I honestly have never heard it before.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Oh, it's okay.
three people in a relationship together.
Oh, that's, I thought that was just a fancy way of saying like a three person like party or something.
That's a trio.
Yeah, that's what I would have known what trio meant, but they said this is a, because we're all betting the same games. And then the guy that we were getting picks from had a terrible Saturday or Friday. So they dropped off and I continued to tail on Saturday. And we were arguing and I said, "Well, this is what you get for not tailing the picks because you had one bad day." And the guy goes, "Well, I'm sorry that the conversation in our group chat's not been fun today, but this is how a thruple works." And I was like, "What?" What does that mean? I honestly have no idea what that means.
I think it's thruple.
A thruple. I said it. If I've never heard the word, how am I supposed to pronounce it correctly?
Context, but you didn't get any context. That's the thing.
Yeah. So I guess I learned what that word means now, and it's maybe an inappropriate word to say on a podcast.
Not really. I mean, now that we've defined it, probably, if you've got your kids listening, I'm sorry.
I've got a thruple with my two best friends on basketball games right now.
It's sort of like, you remember when that show Big Love came out?
I've never seen it, but I know what it is.
It's a good show. Bill Paxton, Gene Triplehorn, Chloe Sevigny. It's a good show. HBO kind of prestige drama. It is what I imagine. It's about plural marriage. It is what I imagine after I'd been married for a while. Because when you're a kid...
What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. Like multiple people
when you have
married?
multiple wives. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So when you're a teenage boy, you're like, whoa, three wives. That would be awesome. Then you've been married a while. You're like, three wives would mean, oh my God, you have three wives. Like that's three people to yell at you and three people to make you do stuff. And that's, that show captured it perfectly because Bill Paxton is like...
It's just a show?
Oh, it's a series.
Is it, and it's like really good?
It was great. Yeah. Bill Paxton no longer with us.
Was that on HBO?
It was on HBO. Yeah, for like five seasons.
Oh, maybe I'll check it out. I watched a documentary, and I don't know if this is the direction we wanted this to go. So just tell me stop. I watched this thing, and I think it was on A&E or the History Channel. I don't even know what channel it was on. It was about polygamists in Utah.
Yes.
And I was like so fascinated by the houses that were built into the mountains. Like,
so that is what they've got in the show in Big Love. Now they're in a suburban Salt Lake City neighborhood. And so from the front, you see three houses. There's one fence around the three backyards, though. So if they go out their back doors, they have a common space for all three families.
So it's three separate houses and each wife gets a house and this man is supporting the three homes?
Correct. He runs a home improvement super center.
Oh, and apparently these houses all are like exposed to the elements or something in one room because they get like a tax break for not having a house completed. Like in Utah, there's a law, I think,
I
think there's a law or something that says if you're still doing construction on your home that you don't have to pay property taxes on it or something.
The only Utah laws that I truly know about are the ones about who can get a drink and where when we take the family to Park City.
You know what's crazy is my Britt's brother lives in Salt Lake, and we've gone up to visit him a few times, and we've gone to Park City. And I'll say, Salt Lake City is awesome.
It is fantastic. And I was talking to someone here who is a Florida fan because they were asking about the whole Utah home and home series because Utah is coming to play at Florida in Gainesville in the first game of the season. And Florida's returning it, I believe, next year or 2023. And I was like, if you want to go to a really cool road game, go to the Florida at Utah. Like Rice-Eccles is awesome. It is kind of halfway up the mountain. They were smart. There was a push to enlarge it. They didn't. It's kind of a bandbox. It is loud. It's a really cool place to watch football game.
I mean, all those stadiums in Utah seem amazing with the backdrops of those mountains. Like Utah State Stadium looks insane. BYU Stadium. Have you been to Provo before?
I've been to Provo. I've not been to a game there. I have been to a game at Utah, but I've been to Provo, you know, when they were practicing, and it's gorgeous. I mean, the whole setup. I love how all the campuses have the letter, you know, built into the rocks in the side of the mountain. So you see the Y over BYU and the U over Utah.
Yeah. I always play this game of like, what stadiums would you want to cover a game in that you've never been to before? And Utah stadiums are always high up on my list because it's just beautiful.
We'll be right back after these words.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Park City, you know, I think people think that it's far away from
civilization. Yeah, it's only like a half hour, isn't it?
It's like 25 minutes from Salt Lake City. So it's just a really, if you're not, even if you're not going there to ski or anything, it's just a really cool day trip to go hang out on Main Street and drink at High West. And
go to a Patagonia store so you fit in.
you got to hit
Patagonia. Did you drive a Subaru up there?
The North Face. It's not Subaru. The vehicle that I've seen in the times I've been there that I'm like, I see more of these here than I've seen everywhere else in the world combined is the Dodge the Ram truck Power Wagon. A lot of those. You got to be able to get up the mountain, got to be able to haul equipment.
Yeah. I drove a Ford Explorer up there and I felt like I was like a man. I had 4x4, was wearing a North Face jacket, had beanie on.
I realize you just purchased a new SUV. We're going to make you a truck guy one of these years.
I do think now that I've driven an SUV for a month that I'm going to have a hard time going back to a car ever.
Oh, once you ride up high, you don't want to drop back down.
It's a shame because getting in and out of my sedan was the last cardio I had left. But
you're going to have to add some squats in because you're just not getting those naturally anymore. But absolutely,
yeah. But it is so much more convenient in every way.
Yeah. No, we're going to make you a truck guy because if you like the elevation of that, just imagine a lifted truck.
I don't know if you know this about me, but we bought a coffee table when we got this house. And one of my friends that I live here drives an F-150 King Ranch, and he let me borrow it to go get the table, and it was awesome.
That's nice. You were liking that leather smell.
Yeah.
The King Ranch has the King Ranch leather seats.
Yeah.
And that's pretty sweet.
Did you see that text I sent you about that ranch that sold from Yellowstone? That
yes,
big one in
the
Texas?
Four sixes.
Did you see how much the sales price for that was?
No.
Guess. Hold on. I got to find how many acres it was.
It's hundreds of thousands of acres.
It is. So yes.
Was it $1 billion?
No, not or quite. So it's a 266,000 acre operation. And it's like multiple pastures, I guess is the right word to say it. And there's all these structures and stuff. And the sale price was $341 million.
Wow. I know I overshot it, but I'm still like,
well,
when
I mean,
hear the price.
It makes sense, though, why it could be $1 billion, because it isn't just like a house. It's a business.
Yeah.
So you have to take into account.
You're buying the whole business, essentially.
Yeah. You have to take into account whatever revenue it's generating, not to mention all the structures and the just sheer amount of land. It's like the biggest ranch in the continental United States. And this one's in Texas. But that, I mean, 200, I can't even fathom what 266,000 acres is. Like, I don't even know like what an acre is. Like, you've seen my backyard. My backyard is what?
43,000 square feet.
Okay. I think I can visualize that.
Take what your house is and you know what your square footage is and multiply.
And then you put it like the second story on the first story and then.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's a lot of land.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so there are people out there still, Andy, that are ranchers 100% of the day. Like being a cowboy is a legit profession.
I don't think you can be anything else. Like I think Yellowstone is lying to us a little bit with Kevin Costner's character being the livestock commissioner and all. Like I mean, and I guess he's kind of the CEO anyway, so maybe he does have time to do that sort of thing. But that is a very labor-intensive operation.
And there are people who live on this ranch in a bunkhouse and absolutely do manual labor with cattle and with land all day, every day. And that's their existence.
Rodeo sprung from them competing with the skills that they use every day on the job. That's what rodeo is.
I mean, I feel like, I don't know who's listening. I'm not trying to be offensive. That sounds truly awful.
Rodeo or the job?
No. I've been to a rodeo before. I stuck out like a sore thumb, but I've been to the rodeo. But that job, and I respect it. I guess the one thing that I do envy is that in our computer-driven podcast, college football, television-generated lives, there probably isn't a lot of time, unless you're on vacation or on a hike or something, where you are out there and you are one with the land.
That's
which
true.
Is like a thing. And if you're a cowboy, like the idea of
Yeah, I cleared a flower bed last weekend. That's about the extent of it. It's not.
Yeah, but like doing things, like living off the land, living with the animals, and like being a actual human that goes out and makes things with your hands, I think is cool. I'm not saying that I disrespect.
I'm not saying I'm ever going to do it, but it sounds
awesome. I'm never going to do any of that. Yeah, but it sounds
this is like Billy Gamilla, who is one of our listeners who writes for an LSU blog. He wants us to have a sitcom where you are my wacky neighbor and we get into all these adventures. I do think maybe we should start a video series of Ari does stuff for the first time.
Oh, yeah, you should have seen me put together my first the baby has this thing that she sits in now because she's sitting upright and is using it with her feet to balance and playing with the toys. Everything was a production. Like, if a package comes in the mail that requires assembly, Britt will look at me and say, I'm going to leave the house while you have your meltdown. Just let me
Here's
know
the thing,
done.
Though. You think you're – and you are terrible at that now. In 10 years, you won't be because you will assemble enough things – and you will do enough projects around the house that things will start to make sense to you.
Do you want to know my number one problem when I'm doing these things? And you'll laugh. What's that? And I'm starting, maybe I'm learning a little bit. But the number one mistake that I do when I'm assembling things is tightening bolts too hard.
Oh, you over-tighten? Oh, gosh.
I tighten them when I'm not
done. You're
going
to crack a toilet one of these days.
Yeah, well,
you're going to have a toilet explode on you.
Because I get encouraged. I'm like, oh, cool. I found the screw that fits into this socket perfectly. I lined it up perfectly, and I
get
encouraged.
Isn't that what we're all trying to do? Isn't that what every guy is just trying to do in life?
I'm doing it, and I'm like, I'm going to screw this in real good. And then, like, that was step six, and then step 20 is adding something in between the nut.
But you don't notice in large letters in every manual where it says, do not over-tighten?
Listen. I'm going to say this, Frank, right to you, Lassie, okay? These instructions on these, they are awful. They are
the IKEA ones don't even have
awful.
Words.
They don't even have words. So like so the only way that I'm able to assemble anything now is if I go to YouTube and I type in random baby bullshit that I just bought into YouTube and watch somebody put it together, and I put it together as they're doing it. And even the videos are too fast. They like cut away. They don't show you what direction should it. And it's just like, if you're going to put me through this, can you at least make a detailed outline of what I'm supposed to do? Because
I like,
that's the
I
thing
like
that's
it when the companies now make some of the companies now make a video. So my wife and I put together our treadmill last year, and the company, like Nordic Track, has a video that they produce, a YouTube video on how to assemble this model. And it is very, like they slow it down for you when it needs to be slowed down. And I appreciated that. It was much easier than trying to read through the instructions. But I will tell you, some of the more simple things will become very easy to you. Like last week, Ann asked me, can you tighten the door handles?
Yeah, that's happening in my house right now.
And so I went and did, like, I got everything I needed. I got my Allen key set. I got my Leatherman that has the little skinny flathead, because there's two different kinds of ways to pop. There's one that has a set screw, and there's one that has a little notch. And I did it in like 5 minutes. And I said to her, I was like, 10 years ago, that would have taken me 3 hours. I would have never gotten them back together. I'd have been screaming. I'd have gone to had
like
to go to Lowe's or Home Depot to buy
thing.
More. Well, off. So what you do, you take, you pop the handle off, because these are handles, not knobs. So you pop the handle off, and then you kind of pry the little cover off. And
that's me looking at my door handle.
And then you just use a Phillips head to tighten. And you got to make sure you get the side that has the screw heads on it, and you just tighten it, and
Yeah.
And you pop the thing back on that you pried off, and you slide the cover back over, or the handle back over, and you either tighten the set screw or you slide it over the little switch, and it'll clip in there. And all of that stuff I understand now, because I messed several of them up and had to redo them five times. And it was crazy, because I was thinking about that. I was like, this is how I remember how Ari feels about everything. as I was doing it, because like I remember just screaming at these door handles, why don't you work? Why is this so hard? Why can't I do this?
You ever
this?
Have that moment where you look up to the skies and say, God, can you just help me out here?
every once in a while.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, whether I'm putting something together or I'm gambling on a football or basketball game, I just look, God, can I just be happy? I bought a bed for the guest bedroom, and I put it all together perfectly. And then the last step, like the headboard and the footboard, if that's what it's called, were loose. And I went through all the instructions, and I labored and labored and labored, and I found out that the screws that were supposed to go into a certain hole were the wrong screws.
Oh.
And it wasn't on me. It was on them. And they like,
but you had to go back through all the steps, take everything apart,
take everything apart. Then I had to go to the store and get more bolts that were not in the box when they should have been, and then put them back together. And I thought to myself, doing this stuff is hard enough as it is. Like putting people through this without even having the correct things in the box. And like, of course, Britt thought it was my fault. And I was like, this time it actually wasn't my fault. And I like worked on it. I was sweating. I had blisters on my thumb from the screwdrivers. And, you know, I was like, I actually really tried to do this correctly.
Screwdriver and blisters.
You don't ever get that? Did you get that?
No, I currently have. I'm showing you this on the camera. From raking, I've got a, every time I have to rake, I get a nasty blister. So
it's like from turning it and the rubber grip on the screw with your wrist, if you're using your thumb, I had a huge blister on the edge of my thumb.
Well, you would have had to miss a start if you were a major league pitcher for that.
Yeah.
By the way, Texas Tech is going to survive. So not a major upset.
Are they going to win by more than 8?
I highly doubtful unless they, they're going to keep fouling here. There's 10.7 seconds left. So Notre Dame's going to miss this free throw. So they're down. Texas Tech is up 6. Notre Dame is
okay.
Not fouling. Did not get the
That's
foul.
That's great. Everybody's Game happy. Over. We're all having a good time.
Yeah. Oh, he fouled. No. Oh, they decided not to foul. Game over. 6-point win. Sorry. Sorry.
I almost jumped through the screen and strangled you on that one.
How are we doing here, by the way? Other than this game.
Awful, awful day today.
What happened?
The biggest play of the day from the pick agency was Wisconsin Moneyline.
Oh, no.
And I watched Wisconsin score 2 points in an 11-minute span. And like, if you've ever watched a basketball game where the team goes and scores 2 points in 11 minutes,
I mean, Wisconsin, if you've watched Wisconsin games,
yeah, like, no, that's I know, but what that was extraordinarily
They have some droughts.
Gross.
Wisconsin that and Iowa, drought. Known that for their droughts, like, and by the way, they're both gone now.
That was Walter White burying his money. If you think that they had droughts, except my money actually was.
I hope most of you get that reference. I really do.
I really hope they do too. And if they haven't, do we have a show for you?
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, that's brutal. Wisconsin money line in the NCAA tournament, that just feels wrong. I don't know if I could ever put
he was really high on Notre
Wisconsin
Dame plus
money
Texas
line
Tech.
In the NCAA tournament.
Very high on Notre Dame plus Texas Tech, and if I didn't know that, I would have bet the other side and lost. So, you know, I guess it all kind of, like, as you I would have thought Texas Tech would have just mauled them. Because Notre Dame's not very good at basketball.
Well, that's what I would have assumed. Notre Dame's third game this week, legs tired, playing as a team that just suffocates you the entire game. I would not have expected a game that close. So that this is, and look, it's interesting because, you know, look, we're all in this business taking the money from the gambling folks. And we do, you know, we have the official gambling partner of The Athletic, BetMGM. I'm not there yet on gambling on sports. Like, I just can't quite get there. I get why it's fun. And I love lines, point spreads. I lines and point spreads, same thing. But over-unders, like, they're very instructive to me. I feel like as historical data, they're really, really interesting. But
what's your block on it?
I don't want to lose my money.
So, like, my mental block on it was always, I don't want to get fired. Because, like, for a while there, you weren't supposed to do it.
Yeah, but now it would be very hypocritical if they fired you. Now, I wouldn't bet on a game I was writing about it.
No, and I never have.
But Yeah, I mean, now it'd be hypocritical to fire somebody for that. I just it's the same thing. Like, I don't like necessarily to gamble in the casino either. When I've done it, I've said, here's my budget, and once I lose this amount, I'm gone. I'm done. I'm leaving. I'm going to do something else. So if I do dip my toe into it, that's probably how I would. Now, it's still not... The thing is, where I live, I still can't... I can't bet on an app yet. There was that
month where... Do you know what the main pool of it is for me?
Hmm.
It gives you something to root for.
Right. Skin in the game. It's exactly what we talk about in the ad reads, and I get it. Like, it's the same reason people watch Red Zone so closely as their fantasy owners or their gamblers.
I mean, think about how the thrilling college football games that you watch.
Mm-hmm.
And like, imagine adding the idea of having a vested interest in your financial future.
Or you can create, yeah, right. Or you can create a vested interest in a game that wouldn't interest you otherwise.
Of course. And everything, like what watching Tuesday night in action is a lot mm-hmm. more entertaining that way. That said, I don't gamble enough money where we're going to lose our house. So it's not like it's something that's, it's more right. of an entertainment thing. Than
it's,
it is.
It's sort of like any vice thing. Like, I like whiskey and I like beer, but I'm not showing up to work drunk.
Here's my thing on vices, though. I don't think that it's a vice unless it's impacting you negatively.
Oh, I only mean in terms of like what the cops call it, like the vice squad, what they deal with. So
do you think that drinking every day, a reasonable amount before bed as a relaxation after a long day is a vice?
It's like a nightcap.
Yeah, like one or two beers.
I don't think so, and or a glass of wine with dinner. No.
Yeah,
I think that's. I think moderation in anything is important. It's sort of what I'm learning with this diet, which I'm not calling it a diet.
It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle change, and it has to be a lifestyle change if it's going to work. But moderation is hard sometimes. If your personality sends you, and that's me with food. I still think about food constantly. I still think about like thinking ahead to my next cheat day. What am I going to eat? Wow, you know, but it's interesting because the longer I do this, the less I think about it.
Here's the thing. So back in my apartment in Columbus before I moved to Dallas, and I guess still here in Dallas, I had a huge bar area where mm-hmm. I had every type of booze and every mixer and everything. Cause when people came over, I always wanted to have, that was like a big thing for me. I could walk by that liquor cabinet 100 times in a day and never look twice at it.
Right.
But if I have a leftover pizza in the fridge and I'm in my bedroom, every single time I walk into the kitchen, and even when I'm not in the kitchen, I'm thinking about the pizza. So like, and for some people, it's the exact opposite. They could have a piece of pizza on the and eat one and like be done and satisfied, but they can't go without
those people,
drinking.
The willpower of those people amazes me. Like the ability to eat two pieces of pizza and be like, I'm good.
Brett, every single day
I possibly do that.
Every single day.
Well, that's what... So Saturday was a cheat day for me. And I had Sicilian-style pizza.
Love that about you.
It was so good. But there was some left over, and I had determined I'm not going to eat it. I figured my son might want it for lunch or for dinner tonight. And so I'm out jogging and my wife asks him what he wants to eat. And he's like, she's like, you want the pizza? He's like, nah, I don't really want that pizza.
What?
And so she calls me, she goes, do you want to keep this? I'm like, throw it away. Just throw it away. Cause I will.
Well, what's
eat
wrong
it
with your
here.
Son is what I want to know.
He wanted fish sticks.
Okay, that's acceptable. Well, yeah, fish sticks rock. Yeah, I'm a proponent of the fried fish. So
he had fish sticks, green beans, and grapes. So he did all right.
I read somewhere that if you have extra food in your house, and your only way to not eat it is to throw it away, that's a sign of an eating disorder. And the only way that I cannot eat food in my house is if I throw it away.
Well, I would argue that I had one for a long, long time. Not in the anorexia bulimia sense, but in the
I mean, there's the other ways too.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I have one. Yeah,
yeah. And people say, well, you know, how come you eat so few calories? How can you do that? Like, because this is the way that works for me.
Yeah.
Like putting every single calorie in, holding myself accountable for every single one I eat works for me. It may not work for you, but that is the one thing I found so far that works for me.
I went to a Mexican restaurant with Britt this week, and we sat down, and they have these amazing house-made tortilla, I mean, corn tortilla chips, both. Oh. And she had
that's
five.
Another one that's a problem for me.
Well, everybody. Nobody sits in a Mexican restaurant and doesn't smash the whole bowl. Separate. But she had like 8 or 10. And I was like, are you going to have any more chips? And she goes, no, I already ate what I said I was going to eat when I came in, and I'm not going to have any more. And I'm like, can you teach me this? That's like, what amazing. Is this method that you have that you're able to do this? And maybe that's why she's very thin and in shape, and I can't see my feet sometimes. So, you know, we're all working on it together, but...
We're all working on me.
As Bill Burr said this, and I thought it was funny. He goes, the one thing I've learned about being in a relationship is we're always working on me.
You said it last episode, too.
I did? Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I remember.
I found that to be very relatable. Britt is a perfect, completed project, and I'm in transition.
But I think that's good. Because I feel like our marriages are pretty similar, where we marry people who are very ambitious, smart, and just do things. It's weird because we make fun of people who say this about football coaches. They do it the right way. But like, I would say Anne runs a developmental program like for herself. Like she lives her life in a very measured, meticulous
so
way.
So Anne is like Mark D'Antonio at the top of his game?
Exactly. Exactly. Like she can take Darquez Denard out of Dry Ranch, Georgia and turn him into a first rounder.
I wonder like what Coach Britt would be.
Well, I think it sounds like she's got a lot of those same qualities that you know, kind of the Kirk Ferentz mold, it's not easy, but here's how you do it and this works.
Yeah.
Which I think honestly
she's also flashy as hell. Does Anne have a Nordstrom problem?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got one of those purses with the L's and the V's on it and all that. And
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about this off air, I guess.
But listen, hey, no, this is, and this is, you hard. And I, you and I have talked about this. They earn it.
Like, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
They can afford it. I don't care what she buys. Who's to criticize?
I don't feel like Kirk Ferentz is flashy enough.
That's true. Well, I would say that Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, all of the people who succeed, they set a standard and you just have to keep meeting the standard.
But we're the recruiters here, guy. Not them.
I guess.
Yeah.
I just, they are demanding, but in a good way. Like, it's more like setting a good example more than anything else, I think.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah. That's the part that amazes me is because I told Anna this the other day. I'm like, I'm not good at just sitting around anymore. And I blame you for that. Like now I'm actually looking for projects to do and ways to make myself useful. And I miss being able to sit on the couch, but I can't do it because I feel guilty watching her come up with something that needs to be done and then doing
it. Yeah. It does sound very similar.
Yeah.
Since I moved to Dallas, I haven't had a single day with her where we woke up on Sunday morning, ate breakfast, watched TV all day, and then went to bed.
You'll never have one again. I'm warning
you
like, now.
And it's that's gone. What I used to do. When I was covering Ohio State as a beat writer, my favorite thing to do in the entire world was cover a game on Saturday somewhere and work really hard, write a great story, feel really good about yourself, and then wake up in the morning on Sunday. And this was my happy place before I met Britt. Put all your NFL bets in, get your fantasy lineup in, open the windows when it's 60 degrees outside, light a few candles, order a Domino's, and just lay there and watch football from noon till 11 p.m.
Wait, so having now heard all the different things about you, and so the picture in my mind is something.
Shirt off.
So your tarp off.
Tarps
right?
off. Yeah.
So you're on the couch. Is the Domino's box laying on your shirtless chest?
That's the what Domino's I want it to be. Laid
I
on
want to
the...
imagine that you need the least air, you know, it has to travel the least distance to your mouth. So you have it on your chest.
I had a coffee table that was the same material as the couch I had in that apartment. The Domino's pizza, and if you order Domino's and look at cheesy bread, you're a psychopath. I always had the cheesy bread. I put that on there, and I would lay on the couch on my back, laptop on my chest, watching GameCast of all the games that weren't on TV, and then Red Zone was on the television, and I would do that for 8 straight hours, texting my friends, obsessing over fantasy, betting on sports, getting in live, doing all those things. And then at the end of the night, at the end of the Sunday night football game, which is usually around 11 o'clock on Sundays, I used to watch 60 Minutes. That was my Sunday night. I'd watch it for an hour.
Morley Safer is your closer.
My closer was always 60 Minutes. I would DVR it. I would watch 60 Minutes, and I would go to sleep around 12:30, full, fat, happy, informed on current events, and either rich or poor based on the way that day went, and I would go to bed with a smile on my face. And I haven't had a single day like that since I moved.
There's here. A Simpsons flash forward where Bart gets up to like 400 pounds, and he says something like, "I wash myself with a rag on a stick." Like, that's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, it was
after a day like that.
Pure laziness. There's no question about it, but there is something beautiful about just laying there after a long day's of hard work and enjoying yourself. And I love watching football, and it was simplistic. You know, it was fun. It was my own thing. And like, I was with my friends because people would come hang, or we had FaceTime. We were all betting the same games.
Would you actually get off the couch when they arrived to greet them?
They let themselves in. The only time I would go to the get up would be to go to the bathroom or to pick up whatever I ordered for dinner off Uber Eats that night.
Life.
Oh, that's why that's why I'm in a position where I have to lose a bunch of weight, because
smartphones didn't exist when I could live a life like that. So
it is amazing when you think about that back in the day, like maybe 7 years ago, you actually had to get off your ass and call somebody and say, "I want to pick a to-go order," and you had to go to that restaurant yourself. And if you wanted something specific, you had to make the effort to go get that specific thing. And now when you're on Uber Eats, it's basically like every restaurant in your town. So it's like, if I wanted a specific pizza that was in Dublin when I was in Columbus and it was a 25-minute drive, I'd have to get in the car and drive 25 minutes, pick it up, and come home. And now you could get anything you want delivered to you at your door without getting up, no matter what. And it's actually not that expensive. Like, it's like $10 to have somebody do that. I'd pay $10.
We are absolutely headed toward the world of Wally. Like, you are one of those people in Wally.
Does that day not sound great to you, though?
I hate to say it, after years of living this other way, no.
Well, I'm only in year two of the other way, and I got to say it. And I love, my favorite thing to do now is run errands and get stuff done with Britt. I love her, and I love doing those types of things very much. But one of those days every now and then wouldn't kill anyone.
I still like watching football. And like, I will say,
well, do you watch the NFL?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I watch.
Like, I obsessively watch the NFL. Like, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, like Thursday afternoon, Friday afternoon. We, you know, if you followed this podcast for a while, the saga of putting in a pool and all that stuff. So we got the pool. The pool works. There's a TV outside that you can watch from the pool. I was watching basketball from the pool all Friday afternoon, drinking beers. It was spectacular.
Oh yeah, I mean, I didn't have a pool. I lived in a $1,100 bachelor pad. But, you know, that was like, life was simple then. And it was like, Sunday is your only pure day off as a college football writer in the fall.
Yeah, it was different, because that was exactly when I was a beat writer. That was the truth. Now Friday is more of your light day. So
2 years ago, Landis and I went on a road trip. And I think he'd be ashamed if I told everybody this, but Bill Landis, our Ohio State,
by all means, please tell us.
we had a road game somewhere. It was a Big Ten game somewhere, and it was freezing outside. And for whatever reason, the news conference wasn't until Tuesday, and we were on the road together, and it was like 10 in the morning, and we were driving back after a night game. And I was like, you know what? We're in a legal state for gambling right now, so you can download the DraftKings app. Do you want to get two rooms at the Fairfield Inn, like right off the road here, and just sit there and watch? No, I know what it was. It was an Ohio State game that was on Friday night.
Okay.
And I don't remember why it was on Friday night, but it was an off night. And we were like, do you want to just, like, instead of going home now, just call your girlfriend and say, we'll be home Sunday, just get a hotel room at this Fairfield Inn, get adjoining rooms, and just lay on the couch and watch football together all day. This is the most
romantic thing I've ever heard.
And it honestly, and we ordered pizza, and I think we went to, at night after watching football all day, we either went to or ordered in from Buffalo Wild Wings, and we watched, it was a Penn State-Michigan game. It was 2 years ago. It was a night game. It was awesome. And it was one of the best days of my life.
It actually sounds like a lot of fun.
That, we were both betting crazy parlays. We got pizza ordered in. We were tweeting because it was about college football. Like, I was super engaged.
Did you tweet something awesome ridiculous day that got you bashed online?
Probably, yeah. You know, some knee-jerk reaction that I had to say that moment that proved to be incorrect an hour later. Probably, but, you know, it was fun.
Ari, I'm curious, among our listeners, how many people heard the tale of that day and said, that sounds like a dream day? A Fairfield Inn off the highway in
brand new suburban Fairfield Iowa with suite nights.
Oh, there you go. The suites in a Fairfield Inn are nice, especially a new one.
So. And if you don't know, they have two TVs. So there's like one long room. There's a suite couch television, and then there's the bed television, and we had two games going. But
you could see them both if you could see them both correctly.
Yeah, it was great.
Now, the only tricky part is your remote will work both of them, so don't change the channel.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we've given out a lot of life advice today. We've watched Texas Tech survive an upset that probably 99% of the people would not have realized was a major upset if it had happened. Ari bet the Wisconsin money line in the NCAA tournament, which I cannot believe anybody ever recommended. We've learned a lot. That's really all there is to it.
Life is hard. So
I want to know from those of you who've stayed with us this entire time, do you feel like that day that Ari just described, is that heaven? Is that hell? Is that purgatory? What is that to you?
And don't forget 60 Minutes, too, because like watching 60 Minutes after a long day of football to kind of... Yeah. Like four stories about like current events. It makes you feel smart. Makes you feel informed. I always find it to be super entertaining.
Rooney. Oh, wait. No, probably not Andy Rooney anymore. But
and then it turned into like the COVID show. And then I stopped kind of watching it because every story was about COVID.
I want to know how you feel about that. We got a big week planned for you. Remember last year we did the coach rankings in every league, and it was sort of, I think it kind of happened organically during a show, and we wound up ranking one league, and then we decided, let's do all the other Power Five leagues. Well, some stuff has changed, because I think if we're talking about SEC jobs and ranking them, we need to include Texas and Oklahoma now, since if you have the Texas job or the Oklahoma job, you can reasonably expect to coach in the SEC at some point. Ditto for if you have the BYU or UCF job, you can reasonably expect to coach in the Big 12. So we're going to redo those rankings again this year, and we're going to start this week. We're doing Big 12, and we're doing SEC this week. Ari's got Stars Matter with Mitch Light. It's going to be a fun week. NCAA tournament still going on. Coach K still playing. We may have a Coach K's last game podcast at some point. It ain't gonna be tonight. They're still dancing. So everybody have fun, enjoy the basketball, and then come back to us, and we'll talk some college football. We'll talk to you later.